I'm Dr. Leif Tapanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Hey, today's guest is Craig Quintana. He's the Public Information Officer Senior with the Idaho Department of Parks and Recreation. Peter, today, guess what we're talking about?
Parks and Recreation.
In Idaho.
In Idaho. This is for the whole state with lots of ways to recreate, too.
There are so many ways to get in contact with nature. And, of course, if you live here, you know that.
Right.
And it's our Parks and Rec system that is one of the main ways we can get out there and have fun. Peter, first off, give us some nature in the news.
So we're going to talk about a climate hero, Leif. And when we look at climate heroes, these are heroes that make a significant impact on our fight against climate change and global warming.
You're going to talk about Jane Goodall, right?
No, we're not.
We're not? Oh.
We're going to talk about our little buddy and favorite odd fellow, the echidna.
They're cute. They have a little pointy nose. They're
spiky.
A spiky hedgehog.
And we talked seasons ago about them blowing snot bubbles to cool them.
They have cute snot bubbles.
To cool themselves off in the heat because they don't have sweat glands. But you know what? They are also climate superheroes.
How can a little echidna be a climate superhero?
All right.
I want to know.
Okay. Do you know how many tons of dirt they move a year?
You're going to say a lot of dirt.
Yes. One echidna can move 8 tons of dirt in a year.
What?
Yes.
8 tons.
8 tons. Because, you know, they dig holes.
They're tiny.
But they eat termites and ants. So they're constantly digging holes.
Okay.
And when they dig holes, of course, there's a pile of dirt and then the actual hole.
Right.
And what happens is that you've got leaves, seeds, dead insects, dead animals, all kinds of organic material that fall into that hole. When it gets into that hole, microbes within that soil break down the organic material, combining carbon, because that's the base for all organic materials. They put carbon back into the soil. If this organic material isn't in the ground, it's sitting on top of the ground, and light will decompose organic material. But that carbon doesn't get integrated into the soil. It moves out into the atmosphere.
So they're helping to recycle back the carbon into the system.
Into the system, especially into the soil. That's the most important area. One of the largest greenhouse gases we have is atmospheric carbon. And they are able to put more carbon back into the soil versus letting it break down by light and it moving back into the atmosphere.
8 tons.
8 tons of dirt.
An echidna, is maybe 2 fists in size. It's not a very big critter.
Yeah.
8 tons. This guy's really active.
I have to do this reference.
Please do.
So echidnas move 8 tons of dirt, and what do they get?
Another day older.
And deeper in debt. Yeah, yeah. It was a little Ernest Tubb reference there for everyone.
That's very nice. I'm fascinated by this. This is happening in Australia, right?
Yeah.
That's where they live.
So if an echidna is doing this, think about other animals that are similar to echidna. So we've got climate superheroes across the globe. Dig a hole. That's what I say.
Our rodents.
Yeah.
Right? Wonderful. Well, it's great to think of them in that light and not just snot bubbles.
Right.
Today's trivia question is very much on topic. When was the Idaho Department of Parks and Recreation created? It was quite a while ago. We're going to learn more about the system, what it does, and why it's so important to our state. When we come back, Craig Quintana joins us. Stay tuned right after the break.
This is KISU-FM Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Rexburg. Also available on your Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
Hey, welcome back. I want to welcome today's guest, Craig Quintana. He's the Public Information Officer Senior with the Idaho Department of Parks and Recreation. Thank you for joining us today on The Nature of Idaho. I love that at the end of your title, I have to say senior.
Right. You know, it's very comforting now that the hair is changing color and there's less of it to have that, you know, tacked on the end.
Right.
I'm not bitter at all.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, Craig, and what you do.
Well, I am the public information officer, i.e. the mouthpiece, for the Idaho Department of Parks and Recreation. What Parks and Recreation means, for those who didn't watch the sitcom, is that we have 30 parks spread across Idaho that we operate. And then on top of that, we also operate some of the biggest recreational activities in the state of Idaho. We run the statewide boating program in partnership with the U.S. Coast Guard. We run the OHV, off-highway vehicle programs across the state. And we also do the snowmobiling. So we have the sticker programs for all of those activities and provide new activities and maintenance, docks, trails, et cetera, as part of that whole package. So we really are parks and recreation writ large across the very large state of Idaho.
Do other states have park and rec departments, or is Idaho a little bit unique in this aspect?
You know, nationwide, it's kind of a 50-50 split that you have some entities that have gone into having a park and recreation department and then a fish and game department, which is how Idaho is based. And then other states have combined the two into a consolidated Department of Natural Resources. It really is kind of a 50-50 split. We just came back from a conference of the Rocky Mountain State Park executives last week. And in talking to people there, it's like each side is sure that they've gone the right way. And of course, everyone goes with what they know. So no one wants to consider any change going into the future. So in Idaho, I anticipate we're going to have two independent units that cooperate and work as one as best we can. Part of that is we have a loaner fishing rod program at most of our parks. Those are fish and game rods and tackle kits that we lend out to the kids. It's obviously an Idaho fish and game program to get new users into their system and at the same time providing yet another recreational opportunity at our parks. So honestly, it's the hackneyed win-win situation, but it may be trite, but it's also true.
As you were describing the responsibility of the department, it seems like a really large task. Is it a large department?
Well, it's not big enough. Some of our paychecks, it is a large mandate, and it's a lot of ground to cover. Technically, within the system, we have 60,000 acres, but Idaho state parks are positioned somewhat strategically. We're always abutting federal ground, sometimes other state ground owned by the Idaho Department of Lands, but there are areas where people like to go recreate. So often our parks become the de facto mega trailheads for people to get out further into the outdoors and to pursue their recreational opportunities. It's a big job, but it's one that we like to do. To your point about the bigness of things, no one knew truly how big outdoor recreation was until we hit that unfortunate pandemic in 2020. And while everyone was hunkering indoors, a good number of those folks decided that they wanted to be outside. They got COVID cabin fever. So we started to see use go off the charts. Our biggest visitation year ever in the parks, and I guess I should take a detour here, some of our neighboring states closed their parks, at least at the outset of COVID. So that clearly had an impact of drawing more people into Idaho where there were opportunities to get outdoors. But it was both camping and day use that skyrocketed during COVID. In 2020, we saw a record 7.7 million users. And in the past, we'd never gone over 6 million. So that tells you kind of the dramatic uptick. It sort of put to lie what one Idaho official famously said in justifying prior cuts to our budget, is that parks are nice, but they're not necessary. Honestly, COVID put that to the lie and showed that we were absolutely necessary and people required that ability to get outdoors and get away from it all.
Saying parks aren't necessary, we all want to stand up and exclaim quite frankly that no, that's incorrect. There's so much data out there about the health effects of being outside and using nature and taking care of nature that it to me that sounds like a short-sighted comment when you were talking about the COVID spike of use. Does the Idaho State Department of Park and Rec, are they also an information source, an education source? Because if we've got all these new users to our park systems, there's a right way to enjoy our parks and trails, and there's a wrong way. So do you guys spend a lot of time helping educate not only us citizens of Idaho, but the folks that are coming from other places on how to use our parks?
Yes. The buzzword in recent years has been recreate responsibly. We've been part of that team that came about in sort of a reaction to the influx from COVID of people coming out to recreate, many of them newbies, not knowing that, yeah, it's kind of a bad idea to pour gasoline on your campfire when you're trying to stoke it. Let's show you the right way. And so that's what recreate responsibly is all about. It's part of our very core and what we do here at Parks and Recreation, in that we have an interpretive team that takes on the tasks of telling stories that can be the history, the nature aspects, the cultural aspects of the things that people are going to experience in our parks. But it also gets at, and this is how you experience it in the right way. If you're going to take it out there with you, make sure you take the wrappers back with you. Don't be that person widening the trail. And so forth, because we want people to enjoy the outdoors, but we also want them to respect the outdoors and not diminish the experience for others, because that can lead to unintended consequences. Often our visitors are leaving our areas and going on to adjacent federal lands, and the feds don't want to see their areas trampled and degraded. And so we do our level best to try and have people go out, but go out the right way. And honestly, it's usually just ignorance. And once you clue people in, they're very apt to do the right thing.
Can you talk about some of the specific state parks that we have in Idaho?
Well, one of our signature parks is up north. It's Farragut State Park, named after the naval hero David Farragut. It's one of our largest parks in terms of the number of campsites, the number of visitors, and is just a bustling place, almost like it was back in the day. In World War II, it began life as a naval training center, and in 1942-43, it was the largest city in Idaho. It had more people living there than the city of Boise. So that's, you know, an interesting historical tale to tell. Plus, it's on a beautiful lake. People just enjoy the heck out of it. We have Bruno Dunes in the southwest corner, which just has a new observatory that has the most powerful, publicly accessible scope, we believe, in the Pacific Northwest. But it's always been known for its astronomy programs. And now that we have this new scope and a new observatory, it's become quite the enhanced experience on days when it's cloudy or during the day. We now have a show that can be projected, a planetarium program inside the dome of the observatory. So it's just a wonderful experience. And if anybody has a yen for stargazing, that actually is one of the most popular activities in our parks. Both Bruno Dunes and City of Rocks have been officially designated as dark sky parks because of the viewing opportunities. So really, that's something that stargazing is something that people seem to be enjoying. And we have a lot of places where they can enjoy it a lot. Other parks of note, kind of in on the south end, we have Thousand Springs State Park, which is on July 1st, is going to have its first real campground open up at Billingsley Creek, 50 new units. So we urge people to check that out. It's not too long of a slog from Boise or Pocatello. For people who want to really get away from it all, we have Land of the Yankee Fork, which just acquired last year the Chalice Hot Springs. And if you didn't know about the Chalice Hot Springs, it was created by a miner for miners back in the glory days of extraction, where they could soak those weary bones after blasting and digging out rock all day. And so now those historic hot springs are part of the park. And so it provides both a recreational opportunity, but also a chance for us to act on our mandate to conserve history. And then speaking of history, if you haven't ever heard of it, the Idaho Department of Parks and Recreation, as part of our trust, has the oldest building still standing in the state of Idaho, Coeur d'Alene's Old Mission, up in Cataldo. It was constructed in 1850, between 1850 and 1853, by the Coeur d'Alene tribe and the Jesuits priests. And it's a wonderful piece of Idaho history that, if you get up that way, I would urge everyone to check it out. It's amazing what they did without the benefit of sawmills and modern tools. And yet they created this incredible edifice. It's sort of that piece of living history that people can go and still touch to this day. Just please try and touch it gently because, you know, it is really old.
You talked about informing and educating people on how they use our park system, but you also mentioned a new campground. You guys just aren't an educational department. You're actually building stuff and maintaining stuff, correct?
Right. That's part of our mandate. And so in recent years, the legislature and the governor have seen fit to provide us a lot of money for backlog maintenance to the tune of $165 million in the last 3 years. So we're fixing a lot of stuff and bringing a lot of things up to the level that we wanted it to be at. Our promise to Governor Little and the legislature is to provide 450 new campsites, 25 new day use areas, and 150 either new or improved boat slips across the state of Idaho. And that's part of meeting that surging desire for more recreational opportunities. At the same time, we're also charged with maintaining the state's trails. Most of that work we do, to the tune of 2.5 miles to 3 miles worth of trail work, is on federal ground. It's in the federal forest. It's on Bureau of Land Management land. And the reason we do that is to keep those recreational opportunities open to the public, because the board that oversees our department has set a policy of no net loss for trails. And we're doing our level best to step into the void and do that, because honestly, as federal land managers will readily acknowledge, they don't have the funding to do it anymore. And without the funding, it becomes this downward spiral. The maintenance doesn't get done. And then ultimately, the trail mileage is reduced. And we don't want to see that happen. So that's one of our strongest focuses, to continue to do that trail maintenance across the state.
Let's talk about the recreational side of the mandate that you have for the state and the kinds of opportunities that you guys help promote.
Well, we're tasked with overseeing the state's boating, off-highway vehicle, and snowmobiling programs. So we have sticker programs where the users apply to get their stickers, and that allows us to then take some of that money and put it back into those programs to expand opportunity and make sure things are safe and it's not always a smiled upon word, but regulated. Because honestly, activities do need to be well regulated for the enjoyment of all users and the general public. So that comes up in the form of our trail rangers out there cutting down trees and brushing of trails to keep them open and safe. Or us providing grants to local county grooming programs to go out there with groomers that we help them secure, and then they operate those groomers to the benefit of all. So we have grooming programs in more than half of the state, or half of the counties across the state, to keep those recreational opportunities open for people during wintertime. Really, I mean, we're in charge of all those recreational activities, and promoting recreation is a serious part of our mandate. And honestly, for the state, it's a big economic boost. We had a study done several years back that estimated that the value of those outdoor recreational programs tipped the scales at $1 billion.
Wow.
The statewide annual economic impact. And so it's big fun, but it's also big money. And kind of an interesting thing for you guys is that in the last 2 years, we did a survey we had to do as part of our kind of comprehensive planning for the next 5 years. We polled 1,000 Idahoans to find out what their thoughts were on outdoor recreation and what they saw themselves doing in the near term going ahead. Was this just an outdoor rec bubble fueled by COVID? Was it going to last? What we heard from 1,000 Idahoans was that they recreate a lot now, and they tell us, a clip of more than 90%, that they intend to do more outdoors in coming years, not less. And so that's very heartening for people in our business to hear.
You know, and I think, too, as our population grows and we've got people and families moving into Idaho, I feel very strongly in saying a lot of people are making their decisions to come to Idaho because of our ability to recreate outdoors. You live in a big city that doesn't have a whole lot of access to even just parks. It's important, and people truly appreciate what we have to offer here in Idaho.
Now, you hit the nail right on the head. If you weren't aware, a business group has come together, a business affiliated group, Idaho Businesses for the Outdoors, just in the last 4 or 5 years. But that is kind of a recognition that some of our largest businesses in the state, Micron, Chobani, St. Luke's Healthcare System, find that there is value in marketing that Idaho quality of life, which includes ready access to lots to do in the outdoors, as a draw to bring more people here.
You mentioned regulation. So for example, on permitting, is there a limit to the number of permits that are issued as a way to reduce the volume so that the quality is maintained at a high level?
Not as yet for us, although, you know, certainly that could be something in the offing. But, you know, that's kind of more something that we're seeing the Idaho Department of Fish and Game do right now.
Right.
I mean, they set a number of tags out there that, you know, for each season on game. A little bit of what you're getting at is like, you know, kind of setting that carrying capacity for our resources. We have Bear Lake in the southeast corner of the state. Half of the lakes in Idaho, half the lakes in Utah. Between you and me, the much better beaches are in Idaho. So that's why we have so many people from Utah come up use those beaches. About a year and a half ago, we went to a reservation system, you know, because we'd have people drive hours to get there and then find that, you know, there was no room at the inn. And now they can register online and have a guaranteed spot. So when they get there, they will have their piece of beach and can go and have fun. But also, at some point when we feel it, you know, that's all the space there is, we close off access because we can't have it get too wild and crazy. That would diminish the experience for everybody. Do we see that as kind of a harbinger of things to come? Yeah, a little bit. But we're just going to have to see how things go. Right now, we take pride in trying to manage the resources while making them as accessible as possible to the general public. And we hope to continue to do that through smart management. The early results from what we're hearing at Bear Lake is people like it. They might not like it when they can't get in that day, but it sure beats the heck out of driving a couple hours to get there only to be turned away.
As we move forward in the future, you know, what does the Park and Rec Department look like for the state? Is there the potential of getting more area, more land, more public, state public land that you guys would manage or expand into? Or is it going to be as more and more people use our state public lands that we kind of turn it into a Bear Lake management system where we have a little bit more control so it stays pristine for all?
You know, we're hopeful to add more. The first priority is to spruce up what we have in-house. You know, we have some long-term maintenance needs and we're addressing those. But as best we can, we want to have both, given that there are budget limitations. At Bear Lake, we just completed a transaction a couple of months ago to pick up 28 new acres on this northwest corner of the lake, apart from our current facilities. And that comes with 1,200 feet of new shoreline that we plan to develop to spread out that current use and improve the access and experience for everyone. That's an acquisition and that will now become a development aspect for us moving ahead. We just acquired those hot springs in Chalice, which then came with a ready-made campground, which now we're uplifting to state park standards. But that is, again, expanding access because we've listened to those people. We've seen what they've been doing in recent years. And then they're telling us they plan to do more. And we're taking them at their word. So we're trying to do it all, expand the resources in our campgrounds while also, you know, making it affordable. We're considering an equestrian campground up in Farragut right now because we have quite a bit of equestrian use, but people have wanted that option to be able to bring their animals in and stay the night. And so we're trying to meet that need. Up at Farragut, we have so much ground that we think we can accommodate them and not inconvenience any other user. So it's just being kind of choosy and strategic with the improvements wherever we can and as money allows.
It's a wonderful thing that the department is doing, and we hope that continued funding keeps coming in to meet the need and the obvious desire by Idahoans and visitors to Idaho for these kinds of opportunities. I started the interview with a trivia question about when the Idaho Department of Parks and Recreation was created. When was it started?
1965.
What was going on in 65?
Governor Smiley was in talks with the Harriman family, the railroad folks, about acquiring the railroad ranch in Island Park. And so one of the requirements of the property coming over to the state of Idaho was Idaho had to stand up a professionalized parks and recreation department. In years past, the state parks, as they were, would bounce around between the Department of Land and the Idaho Transportation Department and had bounced around for decades. And they didn't want to give over this crown jewel that has become Harriman State Park unless they knew that there was going to be someone to manage it well and improve it for the public. That became the Parks Department was established in 65. Ranching ended at Harriman in 77, and the park itself opened up in 82.
If you've never been to Harriman State Park, this is one of those parks that it doesn't matter the day of the year or the time. It is beautiful 365 days out of the year. It's just a fantastic park. Craig, we really want to thank you for joining us today to talk about our Idaho Parks and Rec. And for all of us who want to learn more or probably reserve a spot in one of our great parks, please visit parksandrecreation.idaho.gov. Thank you, Craig.
The Nature of Idaho receives support from listener contributions to KISU-FM. Shows are produced at KISU Studios in Pocatello at Idaho State University with editing and production by Jody Schwicht. Music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. Audio of this and all past episodes of The Nature of Idaho can be found at KISU.org or from Spotify and other select podcast services. Send your thoughts and suggestions to NOID KISU at ISU.edu.